So, welcome to Office Hours. It's 4 p.m. We're going to get started. Please drop your questions into the primetime questions for 0107, because that's the current date today, and I'll get to them when they play it. We'll go ahead and take a look. We have a bunch of questions. Thank you for tagging them with the Q emoji, VT. Let's go ahead. VT says, is this a plausible question? I don't know. It probably could be a plausible question. VT said, did Prime have a nice holiday? Yes, absolutely. I didn't travel. My parents live in, well, half my parents live in Spain, half of them live in the UK. It's a long story. So I usually end up spending like $2,000 to fly to Spain. And I was just like, hey, you know what? No, I'm not spending $2,000 this Christmas. So instead I stayed in the local area. A bunch of people that were local to Resonate had some cool events. A bunch of other people from the community flew in. And it was just like a really good sequence of events and people. But like above all else, right? Every gathering that we had, people there was just sort of like an overwhelming air of acceptance, which is something you don't get much, right? There was like, you know, the various events I went to, there was no one in that room that wasn't at least attempting to be like their true authentic self at all times. And it was just beautiful because it's just like we spend so much time in society not doing that. So those people that were at that event, they knew who they are. You're all beautiful people. Thank you so much for making a great holiday period. And I mean that literally. Like, I'm not saying that just to like throw out compliments. Like, I don't do that. Like, I mean it. Let's take a look. What's next? What is Prime? Oh, actually, yeah. And then on Christmas Day, I also actually got to take Feta with me. So I went to a friend's house. There were lots of people there. And we had a great Christmas, and Feta came along. His first outing to someone else's house. That sounds weird, but I've only had him a year. And we had some training issues early on, so I had to get those resolved before I wanted him to like be in the presence of multiple people. I think there were too many people. So I got a little like stressed and anxious about it because he was stressed and anxious, but, it was still good. Dog is currently asleep on my lap. I don't know if, oh yeah, the camera worked. Let me see if I can get this sorted. Yeah, there we go. So I'm cold. So I just, threw on a bathrobe and then I threw a duvet over my lap and he climbed into the duvet and was like, yeah, this warm my sleep. But you see, I can't move my left hand because he's buried his face in my left hand. Moving forward to what is Prime most looking forward to this year with Resonate. Do check out the YouTube channel. There's a video on the timeline system if someone's very helpful. They'll be linking that. I've wanted the timeline feature forever. I didn't know, like, for a while I didn't know I wanted the timeline feature because I didn't know what it was called or the Freaks had plans to do it, but I was very aware of it. And now we have a video from it. I actually haven't watched the video because I've been busy, but like I agree with everything in the video. I don't need to watch it. I just do. It's a great system that will allow us to do a lot sort of a lot more like narrative and game experiences, which is something that I like really want. Like once we've got that and physics, like the game scenarios that you can do are just like huge. And then VT says, has the dog discovered their favorite food? I mean, they're a dog, right? So the weird thing about dogs is that their sense of taste is lower than ours, but their sense of smell is greater than ours. And that's because taste is just less important to a dog. It's also confusing because taste and smell are basically like similar things in terms of like the brain pathways and stuff. But that means that like this guy will eat anything. I can just list some surprising things that he eats that I didn't think he would like, but he really does like. One of them is blueberries. He really loves blueberries. I had to teach him how to eat them though. And I mean, I guess the easiest way to explain it is like the first time someone gave you a gusher, you know, that candy that's got the juice in the middle. Like, you were like unsure, right? Imagine being a dog and not being able to explain in English what's about to happen, right? Because you chew on a berry and it, you know, it explodes and there's this explosion of berryness that obviously they didn't know about, but they love it. They love blueberries, all sorts. I'm always amazed how strange uses for like a voice assistant come up when you have a dog as well. I repeatedly am like standing in the kitchen and Feta's begging for something and I have to ask my voice assistant. I'm like, hey, can dogs eat this? And it comes back and goes like, no, poisonous to dogs. And then I have to like remind myself that. Luckily, the voice assistant is there, and you kind of get used to it. It's like categories of plants and stuff that are problematic, so you can sort of figure it out by analogy. Like, I think onions are bad, and that means like things like shallots, leeks, green onions, etc., would also be bad because they're in the same sort of rooty, layery vegetable. There's probably a much better name for classifying an onion, but whatever. Moving forwards, we've got Trendelec says, "What is Resonite's policy on content creation such as YouTube, Twitch video streams, especially when it comes to monetization?" So do check our website. There's a bunch of license types on the website. Actually, I'm going to go load it so I don't talk out of my butt. We really need to fix that top bar. Yeah, if you're just doing streaming, you just don't need to worry about it. If you go beyond that, though, you do need to take a look. So our small business license requires that you have 10K projected revenue over a year, and then you need to talk to us. But if it's just streaming and making money on YouTube via your viewership, just go ahead and do it. Dracona says, "What's the Prime doing that isn't this?" I don't know. Why? When he wakes up, this little dog, when he wakes up, he's gonna need a walk because he hasn't had one yet today, and we're probably gonna. It sounds stupid, but I love, and I mean like dangerously love. Like I'd go buy one like every day if I could, but like I've got self-discipline. I'm gonna be going up to 7-Eleven, and I'm gonna be getting like the largest cup of soda that they have available, and I'm gonna be sipping on that all day. I've just realized after like many years in my life, I don't like coffee, right? I'm just drinking coffee for the effect, which is the caffeine. So I purchased just like caffeines as a supplement tablet, right? And so then I replaced my morning coffee with a large glass of water and two caffeine pills, and it works perfectly. But soda also has caffeine, so we're just gonna go get a giant soda. It's also 7-Eleven pricing, so it's like $2, like it's less than $3. It's something like it's a really, really weird amount. It's like 2.19 or something like that for like basically a 2-liter bottle of fountain soda, and it's just beautiful. I was walking up there during the break, and I wanted to go in, but then I realized I had the dog with me, and so I was like, you know, people used to do this in the old days. I'm just gonna do it, right? They sort of tie their dog up outside the store, go in quickly. I didn't know what Mr. Dog would react to that with, but as I was doing it, someone who was working on their car went, "Oh, I'm actually the owner, and provided your dog's well behaved, they can just go in." And I went, "Oh, okay, you're about to make a lot of money." He said, "What do you mean?" It's like I live locally, I walk this dog locally all the time, and you're telling me that like if I just happen to be walking past with the dog, I can go in. They're gonna make a lot of money. Like these like 1 a.m., 2 a.m. dog walks where I'm just like bit sort of peckish, what a snack, right? They're getting money from that. Grand. Is there anything weird of having so many threads coming from Resonite? I feel this is a bit wrong, but I don't know. Oh, that's fine. Can you just like take that and like put it on a t-shirt and be like, Resonite is multi-threaded, yeah? Because like, look, there we go, 235 threads. Beautiful. Andromeda. Given the rise of mods, is there any time we get the proper mod policy? Yeah, it's actually on my plate and on Fruxus's plate to review the mod and plugin policy. Geens wrote one, and it's very good, but the reason it's like held up is because I can't like I every day I have to like roll a dice and then roll another dice and then look at all the dice and then put them on a plate and then put that plate in a cupboard and then actually do the work I need to do rather than the work that I just rolled the dice for. It can sometimes get frustrating, but like it's just so much work to do. Like yesterday, I didn't expect to overhaul our moderation Discord bot, but it has been crashing on and off all over the holidays, and I kind of got tired about it. The problem there is that we had like multiple ways to restart it because it essentially was a Windows VM that was running on a Linux machine, and certain team members had access to the Windows machine but not the Linux machine, and other people didn't know how to restart the machine, or that the machine needed to be restarted, or stuff like that. So it's all fixed now. It should never go down. I won't say ever because computers are unreliable, but it's I'm a lot more confident in its stability. I've got some tidying up to do on that today, but other than that, that problem will never occur again. That's one of the things that we like stress a lot during development as well. When we address a problem, it usually doesn't come back, or if it does, it's like smaller than the other problem. So a good example there being like photon dust rate. Fuchs could have written a really, really quick, dirty, hacky particle system, but that wouldn't have set us up for success. So they took their time and they implemented, you know, a really proper end-to-end solution for particles. And now we kind of don't have to worry about particles ever again. Are there bugs of the new particle system? Absolutely. But there are bugs of the old particle system. So it's like the net gain is okay. Same thing with the moderation bot. There were bugs of the old one. There are probably bugs of the new one, but at least it won't go down now. So Grand is asking about the content policy. It's not a content policy, it's the licenses. So you go to the licenses and you see if any are applicable to you. So if you have greater than 10K projected revenue within a 12-month period, you need to contact us. Otherwise, you don't. And if you have 10K projected revenue on YouTube from your Resonite content, maybe contact us, and then we'll have a conversation about it. One of the things that is very important to mention, because it, like, I don't know if, like, we're more anxious as a society, or we don't realize this because, you know, maybe some of you haven't done business before, but, like, licensing on that page is always a conversation, right? So start a conversation with us. Like, it's not, like, there are other licenses available that we haven't mentioned here. Like, depending on how big you are, how much money you are making, we'll make a custom license for you. Like, but for most cases, when it comes to like YouTube streaming, etc., just do it. Andromeda has linked the wrong license. Wait a minute. Hold on. This is confusing. Okay, I'll raise this because I'm confused, but don't worry about it. just do it. I'll get that sorted at some point. Let's see what's going on. Okay, that's all answered. Grand, like it's all on the website. And if you have questions, you can reach out to our business email address. But for the most part, if it's YouTube, we just do it. Andromeda says, in this case, what is the distinction between personal and business licenses? Personal is for you, business is for a business. Shanley says, can you reveal roughly how many businesses are on are on the plans mentioned on the website? No. Partially because I don't have that data to hand, partially because it's kind of just not usually a good idea to share that publicly. Like, I'm up for sharing it publicly, absolutely, but like I need to run that through the various sort of flagpoles, both thoughts and conversation. Andromeda, if you have further like licensing questions, just go ahead and email our business contact address and I'll sort you out there. I get the confusion and I've noted the confusion and I'm going to go fix the confusion, but until then I feel that we're going to be nickel and diming that page and that isn't a productive use of our time. So I will endeavor to fix that page over the next sort of few weeks to make that clearer by raising it and talking about it with the team. Well, there's nothing else I can do about it today. VT says, have there been any interesting side projects that have cropped up recently due to the overhaul? Which overhaul? Seems to be like all we're doing is overhauls. Which overhaul? Grant says, is it all hands on deck for getting audio across to PureFruits Engine now? That's the last system to move over. No. Nothing that we do is all hands on deck, usually. You have to remember that we have a very limited engineering budget within our team. I'm going to do the count, but like the count's always wrong and changing and different, depending on like vacations and some stuff. Like two to three. It's like less than five engineers. There you go. That's a better way to do it. And what that means is like, every single engineer has to be working on their own projects, right? There are cases where there overlaps. Like, for example, a lot of the audio groundwork has been done by Syro before Fruits needs to take over and, like, do the rest. But, like, it's not all hands on deck. And then the overhaul, VT's talking about AV-related. We haven't started the AV overhaul. I'll just answer generally, I guess. So I know it's like a meme at this point where, actually I'll just get the image from our team Discord. It's in a meme channel. Here it is. So it's kind of a meme these days that like when Resonite people take time off, they work on personal projects and call it relaxing. So that's what Fruits did. They got Gaussian splat rendering into Resonite. I'm going to need to check the update notes. Is it in the update notes yet? No. Okay. So it's not out yet, but like it'll probably be out this month sometime. That is an unexpected side project, and it's actually like really cool to like look into the like the way it works, because I had no idea what like how splatting worked or how it worked, but because it's now there's like a humongous amount of code that's been added to Resonite to handle them, I can like look through that and like understand how it works. It's like it's really interesting. I cannot wait for people to try and make avatars out of splats and stuff like that. Please, please, please don't. Sorry, I'm going to hiccups apparently. Trina says, what's your favorite thing you've worked on and your favorite moment in Resonite since release thus so far? Favorite moment is the King's Coronation. Is Beef in the chat? Probably not. I don't know, I can probably find it. Where are we? Yes, the chair. So I have to explain this one because it's like it's so difficult to explain. We were watching the King's Coronation, and in it there's obviously like a big chair that's ancient. It's effectively like the UK's version of the Iron Throne. And I say that like half jovially, half not jovially, because it's like kind of true. Let me see if I can get a picture of it. Yeah, the coronation chair. Here it is, right? So I'm not talking about this chair, and it's important that we have that distinction before we start talking about the chair, because everyone gets confused and they're like, oh yeah, the chair. And like, you see that piece of stone that's underneath the chair? I can't remember what it is, but it's something like impactful, whatever. The point being, we're not talking about that chair. We're talking about the chair that I just linked, the sticker. That chair appeared to be a rest chair for the Archbishop of Canterbury, who is, what's a polite way of saying old? I'll just go, I'll do it, right? They're getting old, right? So during parts of the ceremony, they wanted to sit down. And I believe that's the chair that they sat down on. But because it was positioned near enough to the Archbishop, who did most of the ceremony, right? He's the speaker for most of the ceremony. It just showed up in random shots, and it was always empty. And I was hanging out with the Australians, who are tangentially related to the crown in terms of, like, patriotism. You know what I mean? Like, their country is tangentially related to the crown, so it was interesting for them as well as I. And we would just, like, scream of delight every time the chair appeared. I don't really know why, but it turned into a game of, like, spot the chair, and it was probably the best moment. If I, like, dig around a lot, I'll be able to find more pictures of the chair. But, like, it still won't make... Like, you had to be there. You had to be there. Oh, fun fact about the coronation as well. I don't know if any of you have watched it, but during part of the coronation, they bring up shrouds, and they put shrouds around the king, who's usually sat in some sort of chair. Not either of the chairs that I've posted. I know it's confusing. I'm sorry. Actually, it might be the bottom. I don't remember. Whatever. The point is, they get shrouded, and then the Archbishop goes into the shroud and anoints the coming monarch with holy sacred oil, and it is unknown what's in the oil, and it is unknown what the actual anointing process is, but loosely they basically had to drench their hands in oil and rub the king's chest. That's like the going theory, and it's obvious why they kind of like shroud that, like, for the respect of the king, but like they also do it because like it's meant to be like a sacred part of the ceremony that's only witnessed by God, bishop, and the monarch. And so only the bishop knows what's going on there. But I just like to have this like mental image of him just like getting oily and just go like, you know, like that's some good mac and cheese noises. Anyway, enough about rubbing oil on our monarch's chest. Let's move on. Emergency Temporal Shift says, wait, does it not rasterize the splats? I'm going to speak out of turn here because I don't have the exact specific terminology here, but I think the answer is no. loosely based, and again, don't judge me on terminology here because I get it, like, I get stuff wrong in terms of terminology. A Gaussian is like a point in space that has a bunch of properties about it. And based on that point in space's properties, we can render it slightly differently. And then if you layer all those points on top of each other in a rendering context, you can see the splats like target. However, because the splats are spheres, they can have variants in their properties around the entire like area of the splat. So they can look, have a different color from the back to the front, to the top, to the bottom, etc. And that means that you get that 3D effect because different Gaussians are lining up with your viewpoint as you progress around the splat. You can see that in, let me grab one of the splat videos. My HD photo of Fruxus' nose coming up. My screenshotting application isn't opening. Open. I need to take a screenshot. So in this picture, you see the two splodges, the sort of beige-brown splodge and the black splodge. Those are Gaussians that are sort of noisy because they're outside the main viewpoint. And so what all the algorithm that I don't understand has done is said, like, okay, we're really far out here, right? So we're at the edge of the limit of the algorithm. So just brown splodge. But if you were to go into the Gaussian, turn around and look towards that brown splodge, the way that they're layered on top of each other via the rendering, that brown splodge might contribute to part of the scene. Okay, let's stop talking about the chair now. Actually, I think I have stuff like the second part of Dracodis' question, because we got distracted by the chair. Anyway, that's office hours for you. Prime speaks about a chair for 10 minutes and then talks about oiling the king. Yeah. Favorite thing that I've worked on. Yeah, I don't know. It was horrible last year, sort of early part of the year, fixing LNL for the corporate clients. But now that it's done, like, LNL's a lot more stable just across the board. So, like, I guess, like, it's favorite looking back on it, not favorite doing it though. Like, it was horrible doing it. Lucas says, is there any code of the girls in splats in the current version of Resonate? I don't know. I'd have to look at the Git tree to figure out what's going on there, but I don't know. Yeah, I'd have to look at the commit tree. I don't think any of it's been merged yet. The problem with it as well is because it's quite a complicated in terms of moving parts issue. Everything has to be merged very carefully. So there's a Unity portion of it, and there's a Resonite portion of it, and then there's a couple of our sub dependencies have code added, which are like elements to assets. If you've decompiled it, you've got some stuff in there. It's not. I've just checked. It's still a draft PR right now. Androma says, what's your opinion on Resonite hypothetically having an inbuilt way to verify yourself to be over 18? Okay, this is where we get to a problem where all the systems that are in this area are like overlapping on each other in a really problematic way that's kind of difficult to sort out. So I'm going to list the sort of actors that are involved in this problem. So there's Resonite, there's the employees of Resonite, there is the laws and regulations of the of the company headquarters, which is Czech Republic, right? So there's the Czech laws, which we as a company have to follow. There's the person who is verifying their age. That's another actor in this humongous problem. And then there are the laws and policies of the country or province, whatever you want to call it, that person lives in. And then if you add to it things like ID verification or facial photos or stuff like that, that is also like another actor, that data, right? And all of those things have differing ideas on how that process should work. Like, the regulations for countries are different. The ideas that us as a team have are different to the ideas that the company needs for that particular area. And no one's happy, right? So I don't know what the fix for that is, but there's just a lot of fixes that I don't think anyone's going to be 100% happy with. Like, here's an example. The safest way for us to do it would be to partner with a third-party ID verification service. There's a bunch out there. They're all the same, really. They probably have different prices, different features, different qualities. But, like, basically, they are, you go to a link and you scan in your ID, and then they go, like, yep. And depending on that provider will then shoulder tap Resonite and be like, yep, we validated them. Here's their actual date of birth, tap, tap. But there's a lot of people who are sitting, maybe even in the audience, and they're like, I don't want to give my ID to a random company. It's like, okay, cool. So you don't want to give your ID to a random, and this is what I mean. We're like, no one can be happy, right? So, okay, we remove that random piece of software. Maybe we use a different one. Maybe the problem was that particular company that we were using for ID verification. Maybe they were shoving their photos that you gave them into an AI model or something like that. Understood why people would be uncomfortable with that. So we pick another company. And then it comes out on Twitter that that company has been bought and it's also going into AI, and suddenly we have to implement it again. And it's just like, oh, there's no way to keep people happy. And then let's say we do the alternative to that, which is we validate it. Okay, so how do we validate it? So there's one option, which is automated, at which point we need artificial intelligence. So we have to shove your images into a model. You don't want that. Or there's review, at which point all the employees of Yellow Dog Man Studios, or some subset of them, probably moderation or something like that, have to spend significant time reviewing IDs. At which point it's like, well, how do we store those IDs, delete those IDs, comply with all privacy regulations with those IDs, etc.? How do we deal with fake IDs? And we have to build all that system. Hence my naive desire of wanting to go with a third-party company. If we did first-party solution, some people would be like, oh, yeah, but I don't want the moderation team looking at my ID. And it's just like, yep. And then if we do a first-party solution, it's like, oh, well, we're catering for the Czech Republic's laws, maybe not for America's laws. And so it's like, you know, America's like knocking on our door saying, you're doing age verification wrong. You need to do it this way. So like, it's such a complicated problem because every single element and actor in that like thinks it should be done in a slightly different way. And so the circular conversation that we get into is like, should we be doing this comes up, and then we like rat hole into various like methodologies of doing it. And then we start arguing or talking about the various problems and solutions with those methodologies of doing it. And before you know it, we're not even really talking about the root of the problem. And so it's really important to focus on the root of the problem there. And like the root of the problem is, why do you want to verify that someone is over the age of 18? Because you want them to be able to access not safe for work worlds or sessions, etc. Cool. Well, okay, is there a different way of solving that that avoids all this problem? Don't know. We can make strides into it. So Gaines was working on for a while, like a rule dialogue or something like that, that would allow people to display text, but it wouldn't do any sort of ID verification. So it'd be like, hey, like, here are the rules before you go in a session, and you got to be over 18. Is that okay? And if you click no, like it wouldn't connect you to the session or something like that. They didn't get very far into the implementation, so I don't know any of the details. But that was like one of the solutions there that was good, because it was a move in the right direction, and lots of people were against that feature for some reason. But like, it's a move in the right direction to sort of allow forward traction that doesn't have all these actors fighting. One of the other things that we have an issue with as well that we need to kind of figure out is, if we start doing age verification, it removes the sort of burden from community members and managers who are right now are doing their own age verification however they want to do it. And that is a good and bad thing, because it can do complacency, right? So let's say that we have this feature where there is age verification and you can make, you know, an 18 plus session, and only 18 plus people that are verified through our system, however it works, can join that session. At that point, the administrator of that community or community manager, whatever you want to call them, they might get lackadaisical in their policies and procedures about verifying age, at which point we are then the sole like liability and responsibility for doing it, which like sounds cool and sounds like a cool way of doing it, but we can't remove like the community manager's liability as well, right? Let's say, because like it's just so many edge cases, like let's say that you have an age verified account that has gone through whatever methodology we want, but their son or daughter has got access to the computer and is using it and is then in an adult session. Right, that would still, that at that point, it would be up for the community to self-moderate themselves still, but they may blame us, even though the problem actually is just bad physical security on the original like age verified user. So you see how like it's a big can of worms. There's a bunch of GitHub issues around that you can go talk to if you want to engage in those issues. My one ask is that you try and focus on what are we trying to solve and how are we trying to solve it, without worrying about like companies stealing your data and stuff like that, right? Those things were a given, right? If we have a solution that's like a couple of boxes and some arrows on a piece of paper, we can then fill in those gaps with reputable solutions that have features and promises that you guys might like. Of course, there's a whole other side of this, and I know I'm waffling at this point, but there are some places and establishments, and in some cases this has happened, but in other cases it's like either being threatened to happen or being discussed within the political realms, about having sort of like a national ID scheme whereby the ID verification isn't even handled by third-party companies. It's handled by the government, right? So if you want to verify, hey, user probable prime is government entity, I'm not a SOVSIT, I promise, but that was like a SOVSIT like sentence. But the government entity behind the name probable prime needs to do age verification via the government website with their government identity. It's just like, it's a mess. I need to double check like how VRChat are doing it. Like I read all the update, I looked at it, and I'm like, cool. I know a lot of people are like, that's really bad, that's really good. It's like, they're a company, they have to make like forward traction, and it's a good forward traction. I don't know how popular it is with the community though, because I haven't looked into it that much. It sort of happened towards the holiday and I kind of just switched off. Right. I believe that's that question over. Now we're down to the chair. Excellent. Let's go past that. So Choco says, what's the rate limit of API at resonite.com? It varies depending on which endpoint you're using. I believe the endpoint tells you, like, in its headers. We use pretty standard Azure stuff, so it should be in the headers if we haven't, like, somehow screwed stuff up. Okay, there's no cache headers on this particular endpoint. Let's try the user profile endpoint. Okay, yeah. So the rate limits vary depending on which endpoint it is. There's no list for them because, remember, API use isn't officially supported. I could easily go generate a table for you now and whack it on the wiki, but I shouldn't do that because that's supporting API use. Chandlik says, it's possible to upload raw assets to the inventory, such an image that would be later used with a resdb reference. Yes, no. You can technically do that. I don't think it's exposed to you in a way that you can do it from in-game, though. You'd have to use like API stuff to do it. Grant says, are there things in place and understanding to try and avoid scope creep in Resonite's development? I feel that at times, looking at DevVlog, that scope creep seems to show up, like with particles. The minimum to get the system over didn't seem to be what we got. We also got extra features as well that weren't needed for minimal viable product. I understand what you're saying, and there's no real way to sort of give you a feeling about that one. We don't like MVPs, though. Like, the MVP that we had was like several weeks ago when Fruks was like, hey, particles work. And it wasn't released to you, but that was the MVP. And then we polished it before we released it to you guys. Like, that's two separate events. Like, one is getting particles working, and then the second one is like, hey, the particles are available and released to you, which we just had, I think, we had a few updates ago. Sorry, I'm still not with it. I'm also beginning to sweat profusely because I turned on my heating and I've got all this stuff on top of me, including a duvet and a dog. I understand what you're saying, and in some cases I do get frustrated by it, but it generally does lead to a better product. If you're looking in the sort of MVP area, you start sounding, and I apologize for this, but you do start sounding like a corporate drone when you start using buzzwords like that. I think the important thing is to keep the conversation open, which we do as an internal development team. So a good example is Stripe, right? So Stripe, we could do a billion things with Stripe. We are actually releasing an MVP of Stripe that has just what we need, and we're doing a bit later. Like, a good example is the website, our website portion, not Stripe's website portion, but like our website portion of Stripe, doesn't look the best. Like, it's not visually stunning. That's not for MVP. I get it. It's just like, yeah. Andromeda says, a bit towards the more grander aspects of Resonite, what are your hopes and wishes for Resonite in 1, 5, and 10 years? You see, the 1, 5, and 10 year question is something that, like, it happens a lot in interviews for jobs and stuff, and I hate it because it's usually like, where do you see you, yourself, personally in 1, 5, and 10 years? The answer is, I don't know, maybe on the moon in 10 years? I don't fucking know. Like, who's got it planned out? When it comes to Resonite, like, I can picture what we're going to have in 1, 5, and 10 years, but like, I still don't know. And the reason is because we're still in what's called the survive phase of like a startup. And what that means is, you know, like a belt sander, there are some days where it feels like I'm just smushing my face into a belt sander that's running. Because that's how like difficult it is to do certain things or get certain things moving or cope with some of the workload or some of the sort of situations that we're dealing with, because we are limited staff, limited resources, limited in some cases services and servers and stuff like that, right? Not to much more extent there, like because I'm resolving all of that, but it's like there are so many things I want to do, there are so many things I need to do, and as like a one of the sort of early people in the company, the sort of 1, 5, and 10 year vision is more heavily emphasized on people like me, people like Fruks, people, well, anyone on the team right now, basically. Like if we start hiring more people, the more people we get, like the less responsibility for them to think about the big picture is, because the more sort of like role specific responsibilities that we're getting. A good example here is like the worries of the CEO of Microsoft are completely different from the worries of an entry-level engineer in the Microsoft Word team, right? The entry-level engineer is just like, I need to fix probably like between 3 and 6 bugs a week to stay employed and be happy and productive with my manager. And the CEO of Microsoft is like, what's our AI story? What's the next 5 years for Microsoft and AI? I'm going to think about this in my million-dollar mansion and sip expensive coffee on my balcony in my house that's made entirely of glass for some reason. You know, like it's a different scope of problem. And so because we are like still in that survive phase, everyone should be thinking like the CEO of Microsoft, like what is our plan for AI? Like a good example here is like, I want to at some point, and there's no time to do this right now, I want the team to come up with like an AI policy. And we write it down. And it means that like, should a company come to us in the future and they're like AI buzzword, blah, 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 we have a document that we can then read and figure out, do we want to work with that company or not? And it might say things like, we're okay using these types of AI, not these types of AI, or we don't want to ever put our users' content into an AI training model and stuff like that. And I don't know what those policies are, so don't get angry or not angry about what I've just said. Those are just examples. All right, moving forward, keep like rat-holing and getting distracted and talking about rubbing oils into Monarch's chest and all sorts. Grant, what is your thoughts on having a volunteer community manager, or maybe with a volunteer behind them, to take a look at feedback and the general feelings of the Resonite community into meetings that YDMS has? We don't need that. Like, we have your community voice. Like, I get what you're saying here, but like, that isn't solved by a person, that's solved by more resources. So every single member of the team is doing that right now. Every single member of the team is helping to take feedback and general feelings of the Resonite community into meetings. Like a common one we get from Dante, for example. Dante looks after the support side of things. That's not all they do. I don't want to diminish what they do. But like if a support ticket comes in, 9 times out of 10, Dante is going to be responding to you. Dante will raise in meetings like, hey, people are still having a lot of issues connecting their Patreon. And we got like 5 or 6 new admin commands for the Patreon stuff that allowed Dante to increase their ability to close support tickets by like double. And now there's still some more issues and we'll do some features to improve that, etc. Take feedback. I'm taking feedback right now, right? All the feedback that you're giving, all the questions that go into my head and they bounce around, and there's a few GitHub issues I need to go look at, there's a few things I want to go look at, etc. It's a good place to be. So while I agree that like eventually when we're a little bit bigger, we'll probably have some form of community manager or role like Tupper from VRChat, we don't need it right now. We're too small. And when we do have it, there will be a paid person that is paid to do so. You have to remember that we have the mentor team as well. They do regularly provide feedback up the chain that we do take a look at. But it just like it, I understand what you're saying, but like we're all doing exactly what you're describing right now, all of us. For anyone that doesn't understand the GitHub issue system, I need you to be very specific about your reasons why. I get a lot of feedback that people don't like it or don't want to use it, but they never explain why, and it gets kind of annoying. The second, like when I ask why, they'll be like, it's too technical. And I'm like, okay, tell me more. Like a good example would be like, I don't know, this is going to be a bad example, but whatever. I'm suddenly need to fly a plane, right? And I go into the plane and I sit in the captain's chair because the captain's dead or something. And I'm just like, whoa, there's stuff everywhere. This is so complicated, right? The next thing that's going to happen is maybe someone on the radio is going to talk you through landing that plane. I watched a film the other day about that. It's a long story, but like, it's a bad analogy, right? But they might say like, hey, calm down, just focus on this one aspect. Like, what's confused? I need you to find the heading, right? Because they're usually going to change the autopilot or whatever. And it's like, look for the, like, look for this particular thing and we can fix that particular thing. That's what I need, right? I need you to like look at the giant cockpit and be like, that particular problem over there is a problem. And then we're like, okay, we can fix it. Whereas if I just get, it's hard and confusing, there's nothing I can do about that. I can't materialize any changes to how things work there. All I can do is just like be frustrated. So more words, give me more words, and then I can provide more help. Climber says, could the cause setting access control our origin for the API be set to star? I think that needs a GitHub issue because I need to do some research on if that's okay to do. I think it is, but I need to double check and then I'll go ahead and do it. All right. Moving over to Nuki, who says, how do collider-based actions and components actually work? I've noticed there's no manually built-in triggers for listeners. It just links colliders to the action component without any further input. How does that work? I haven't opened Visual Studio yet, so I'm going to go ahead and open Visual Studio. I would try and answer, but I'd blunder through it. So I'm just going to open up the code base and then I'll come back to that question. Vemport says, I feel like one thing could be kind of handy is active community members, rather than saying, hey, make a GitHub issue, helping and making the issue for new users. There are a lot of people to do that. I know that there's a lot of mentors that do that. I don't want to name any names because like I'm going to forget or target someone that's not actually doing it. I believe someone in the Creative Jam community was doing a lot of that for people. So that's cool. I want people to fight back against something which I'm noticing that like occurs in society these days. Sorry, I'm getting back on my soapbox here. I promise I'm not going to talk about oiling up a king. You can learn anything and you can do anything, but society is teaching that you can't. And so you're like, no, I can't. So if, and I'm not saying that you are, but if in your head you're like, I'm never going to understand GitHub, the community team are never going to listen to me, I promise you, just give it a go, put issues there. And even if we don't get to the issue for a year, I'm sorry, there are 1,900 issues. It's kind of impossible, right? It still is valid. And I do assure you, like, it's not 100% of issues, but it's like, it's close to like 80, 90% of issues. I read every single one. Usually I'm like lying on the couch and like doggo's like half asleep on me and I see a new issue come in and I'm like, that doesn't sound right. I thought I was looking at that, right? And then I open it up on my phone and I read it and I go, interesting, right? And then it goes into my brain somewhere and I will incorporate that feedback into my work. But that doesn't necessarily result in the issue being fixed immediately, but it is affecting me mentally, right? It is changing the path. Influence or inception, those sorts of words come up, you know. What's a good example of that? Like all the networking issues, right? So we fixed up LNL, then we fixed up the bridge and relay because they were crashing because they were running the old version of .NET. It's a journey. What I'm describing here is a journey, right? So the next part of the journey in the LNL space is supporting IPv6. And you'll see that's actually on my board. And I'm like putting updates in that issue about me working on V6. So like it's happening. It's just like, I know that the speed is slower than you would like, but like, look at our team size. We don't have that many people to work on things. Hi, Mr. Feder. Are you awake? Aww. The way I understand it and one of the reasons why I'm looking at IPv6 again is because we have a bunch of business that's occurring over in Japan, and those markets are using IPv6 a lot more and in some cases are denying access to IPv4, so we just kind of need to do it anyway and it will improve connectivity there. It's also a good idea because it's like it's a pre-step to make sure other parts support IPv6, right? So if LNL supports IPv6, great. What else do we need to make sure supports IPv6? Okay, the API, SignalR, probably other stuff there, but you know, we need to double check it. But it's a journey. But like, if you look at like where LNL was, like say 2 years ago to where LNL is today, we've got like dynamic window sizing, the logging's much better, we've got ports and stuff all fixed up. All right, Visual Studio is loaded. Could Nuki, if you're still there, could you name a component? I just want to make sure I'm sort of collider-based actions and components. Name a component that you're using. Thank you. Whilst Nuki's responding there, I'll grab Andromeda's question. Any opinions on in-game scripting with text, or do you think we'll get overrun with WebAssembly in the future rather than Flux? I think there'll probably be two camps. There'll be one camp that does WASM and loves it. There'll be another camp that hates WASM and will only do Protoflux. There'll also be the middle people who don't really care either way, and they just use whatever tool gets the job done. My analogy for that one is over in Gary's mod, there is a popular add-on for Gary's mod called WireMod. Now, don't quote me on all of this because I haven't played Gary's mod in many years, but at the time that I played Gary's mod, WireMod enabled you to wire up circuits. You could have like NOT gates and you know, memory circuits and edge detectors and all sorts of stuff like that with like physical, like, not it's a game, but you know, like you had to link them together a little bit like Protoflux. But then WireMod added this thing called expression chip, and the expression chip was horrible. The first one was, at least. You could write code, it was sort of like Lua, but not exactly, into a chip, and then you could connect wires to it. So it was like writing your own microcontroller for a bit, and that was really cool. But then they made expression 2, and expression 2 was like, it was like drugs for Prime, right? Prime wrote expression 2 chips for like thousands of hours, and Prime took commissions on expression 2 chips. Prime used every function in expression 2 in WireMod. The community that Prime was a part of during the Gary's Mod days is responsible for, I don't know if this still occurs, but when you are editing an expression 2 chip, like gears appear above your head. Like that I'm responsible for that. I don't know like what WireMod are doing these days. I don't really care. That's not like I don't care, I'm disinterested. It's I don't care, I don't have time to care. There's an important distinction there. But like that scenario where you had a WireMod chip that you could write code into, or you had WireMod wires that you could wire stuff around with, had those three camps that I talked about. The don't want to use expression 2 chip camp, the always use expression 2 chip camp, and the I'll use the best chip for the job camp. All right, moving forwards. Nuki says, as a programming teacher, something I constantly notice is people immediately deciding something is too complicated for them before trying. Yeah, it's a sort of, I don't want to like label it with this label, but this is the label that it needs to have, because the label is problematic in that it's sort of, I don't know, it's negative in its outlook. But it's called learned helplessness, and it's something which, like, sort of, I don't know, but it's happening because of the internet, or at least that's my theory, getting back onto my soapbox for like one sentence or two. But it's like, instead of like your brain, and this is everyone in here, your brain, you can quote me on this, your brain, full stop, Prime 2025, your brain is like exactly the same structure as like the industry leading world scientists right now. Like the best scientist in the world fundamentally has the same brain as you. And so you can do it. You just need to like learn. I wish like tuition and education was more on sort of the aspect of how to learn a little bit, because then it would be great. I really dislike people who say like, oh, I'm too smooth brain for Protoflux. It's like, well, just try. I'm gonna have to shift this dog or I'm gonna explode. I was just like boiling, basically. Let's get through these questions so I can get out and get my big cup of Dr. Pepper and do some work. Where are we? Grant says, did you see it possible for us to use WebAssembly to create custom flux nodes and have a hybrid? Yeah, probably. Remember that, as far as I'm saying it, like WebAssembly is like one of those clouds in the sky ideas. It's not crystallized down into rain yet. Fruits might have crystallized into rain more, but I would have to go digging through YouTube videos and GitHub issues, which I'm sure are there and I'm sure are fascinating, but I don't have time to do that right now. Okay. Everyone's saying learned helplessness was long before the internet. I guess like does it stem from sort of like the inequality of education in the early days, maybe? Because like it used to be a privilege to be educated, right? You used to need to be of wealth or of nobility to be able to be educated. Maybe it comes from that. I don't know. Like a classism problem, right? It's like, I'm not good enough to learn, or something like that. Like, yes, you are. Feta, please don't bark at the door. Of course, you can understand English perfectly, and you're turning around and looking at me and having a conversation about the geopolitical situation on the planet. Yeah, I am far in the weeds. Electronus, thanks for the reminder to go back to the questions. All right, so it was Nuki's question. Collider User Tracker. Collider User Tracker is a collision listener component. That's a mouthful. Oh, cool. Yeah, that's really smart. That's really smart, actually. Okay, so it's a class hierarchy, if you know programming. So most of those collision components, in fact, I can get you a list real quick. Go to implementation. Character event trigger, character force field, character parenter, character teleporter, collider user tracker, and character collider world link. You didn't know that was one. Those all use the same logic. And the logic basically goes, when a component is added to the same slot that I'm on, so imagine you've got one empty object and you've added this collider component and then you add a collider, it will get a notification on that through the event system and it'll be like, hey, you've added a component. And when the component gets added, it gets handed to that event handler and the event handler goes, hey, are you a collider? And the collider goes, yo, bro, I'm a collider. And then it... I'm going to finish this, but I've got like a song. What's up? Has the mic died? Anyway, so when that event happens, we're like, hey, here's a component for you. And if the component's a collider, we're like, hey, just give me your collision events. So it's quite efficient. Let me swap over to the mic here, see if I can hear any problems, seeing as no one's responding. Sounds fine to me. Maybe it just garbled for a second. That happens sometimes, like the bandwidth can change or whatever. That's Collider User Tracker. You asked about Touch Button as well. I know Touch Button is different. So let's go take a look at Touch Button. Oh yeah, Touch Button is an iTouchable. I don't remember how iTouchable works. Yeah, I'd have to look into Touchable more. But that's how that component works. Thumbs up. Grand, you can have the final question. Absolutely. Let me just make sure I haven't missed any. Electrona says they want to double check their understanding on something. This goes back to the raw assets would also get cleaned up if it's not referenced in an asset component. Yes. There's like a bunch of asset components that do it, asset provider or something like that. But some methodologies of using assets will signal to the asset system, I am using this asset, don't clean it up. And some methodologies won't. And so the asset might be cleaned up. Yeah, it's great. Like, it basically, like in terms of sort of like optimization or management, when the component is added, like a bunch of code runs anyway. So it just adds a little bit of code to the end of that, or middle of that. I don't actually know the sequence of events there that says, hey, give me your events as well. Okay, let's take a look at what does the abstract prototype class do? If it's abstract, it probably doesn't matter. I don't see any classes labeled prototype. You have a full class name. Electrona says, storing URLs in something like a multiplexer instead of a text-to-D component. Absolutely, that's one of the examples of where assets might accidentally be cleaned up. Nuki, you asked, what does the abstract prototype class do? What are you asking? What do you want to see? I don't understand. You want to see the collision listener class? I don't think I can give you that whole class, but I gave you the function that's important. Like here, I'll give you one more line, and it's basically how it works. There you go. Like that, plus the event handler that I pasted above, and like that's how it works. Oh, the touch ones, they're too complicated. I've got to look at them more, because it's tied into the touch system. I'm going to leave off here. We're 6 minutes past the hour. I'll get you some information about the touch system, hey, maybe next week. I hope you enjoyed prime time. Sorry for the random political rants, but... hopefully the ideas there aren't too controversial. I will speak to you later.